From NPR News, this is live coverage of the Iowa caucuses. I'm Robert Siegel. Across the state this evening, Republicans began picking their favorites to compete with President Obama in the fall, and the results are close.
So winning this precinct is Ron Paul with 67 votes. Coming in second is Mitt Romney with 45.
It's a tight three-way race. Paul and Romney are running close with Rick Santorum.
We need someone who can do what America needs to have done. And that is, number one, defeat Barack Obama.
Democrats had their caucuses in Iowa, too, this evening. Of course, no contest there. More details from Iowa just ahead on special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage of the Iowa caucuses from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Joining me in the studio is NPR's Ron Elving, our senior Washington editor. And we're getting more and more precincts reported. We're up somewhere around 80%. And what do we see?
We see an enormously close race between Rick Santorum, the upstart candidate who consolidated the vote of religious conservative voters in Iowa in the very last days of the campaign. According to the entrance polls we saw tonight, many of these people made up their minds today or over the last weekend. And he consolidated the vote that had gone heavily to Mike Huckabee in 2008. And that has enabled him to match Mitt Romney stride for stride tonight. It appears, at least from one count, that they are separated literally by 13 votes, not percentage points, votes.
Votes.
Each at a little less than 25% of the vote. And then Ron Paul, another surprise in the Republican field, a little bit above 21%, and he's brought in a lot of new voters.
At this point, it's 11 p.m. In the east of the United States, 10 p.m. In Iowa. By now, we would have expected to have heard some concession or acceptance speeches of some sort, but the vote is so close that obviously candidates haven't figured out what kind of speech they're giving yet, and they're blowing right past prime time.
The nature of these caucuses seems to be that none of these candidates feels it's necessary to declare any sort of a concession. They're all going on to the debates this coming weekend, and they're all going on to either New Hampshire or South Carolina. And, of course, the three people who are locked at the top would like to be able to come out and give a speech calling themselves the ultimate winner.
Let's hear how it's playing at Santorum headquarters in Des Moines. NPR national political correspondent Don Gagne is there. And is that about right? Whether he comes in first, second, or close third, it's a victory for Rick Santorum as far as they're concerned?
This is a victory party, Robert. That's all there is to it. People don't seem to care if he's up by a half a percentage point or down by a half a percentage point. They have seen, reports that it's now between him and Romney for first and second. They're already looking ahead to New Hampshire, and they say that he's from Pennsylvania. He knows that area better than Mike Huckabee did when he won the Iowa caucuses 4 years ago and went up there as kind of an unknown Arkansas governor. So they're not treating this as a one-off, and they're treating it as a victory again, regardless of the final numbers.
Although we should say here that many people in New Hampshire live in the Boston media market. I mean, they've known Mitt Romney as the governor next door, not to mention the fact that he's been campaigning there in 2004 for George W. Bush, and then his own campaign in 2008. He's been around. It'll be a tough place for Santorum to play.
It will be a very tough place, and there's no kind of natural constituency for him, especially if you look at how well he did here with Christian conservatives. They want him to do just well enough there, and the real prize, they say, that is actually gettable is South Carolina. The key, though, is that the field thin a little bit, so that he doesn't run into the same problem Mike Huckabee did in South Carolina 4 years ago, which is barely losing because the Christian conservative and social conservative vote was divided up by candidates still in the race.
Well, let's say that it is not divided, and that people in that part of the Republican Party coalesce around Rick Santorum. Is the Christian conservative wing of the Republican Party so large that it could actually deliver a nomination?
Well, it's large enough to give Mitt Romney trouble. And that's the main thing right now. But as far as its ability to carry Rick Santorum to the nomination, that's a very premature question at this point. Again, he has not gotten the scrutiny that a candidate who who does very well in a place like Iowa will get.
Don,
so all the spotlights will be on him now.
Thank you, Don. I'm going to interrupt because right now we are getting a speech from one of the candidates. Ron Paul, the Texas congressman at his headquarters, is addressing his supporters. Let's hear what Ron Paul has to say.
But all I can think about in tough campaigns and all the hard work is the work you people do. It is unbelievable, the energy you have and the effort that you have made. But what makes me feel good about it is you're doing it because you believe in something. That is what's worthwhile. But you also know that there's two good things. Some people say, well, you guys just do that because you believe in something and promote a cause. Certainly. But how's the best way to promote a cause? That is win elections. That's the way you promote it. Now, the enthusiasm has been unbelievable. It's fantastic. It's national. Thousands of people now have been involved, not only in Iowa, but around the country, and they're ready and raring to go. But we have to look at the wonderful changes that have occurred in our country in a positive way. The country has suffered a lot in a negative way. The economy's in trouble. Our civil liberties are being trashed. Our foreign policy has been a mess and drains us, both economically and our military forces.
This is live coverage of the Iowa caucuses from NPR News. We're listening to Ron Paul, who appears to have run a strong third, so far as we can tell, in the Iowa caucuses, addressing his campaign headquarters and his supporters. Again, here's Congressman Paul.
That is the conviction that freedom is popular. But once again, we have had a fantastic showing for this cause and challenging people, not the status quo that we have been putting up with for decades after decade, but challenge them and saying, you know, let's challenge them. Let's go back to this real old-fashioned idea, this very dangerous idea. Let's obey the Constitution. And too often, those who preach limited government and small government, they forget that invasion of your privacy is big government, and we have to emphasize protecting your personal rights and your economic rights are what the government's supposed to do. They're not supposed to run our lives or spend our money. And also, along those lines, what we have introduced with so much enthusiasm, I hear it so often from so many volunteers. The other day, somebody came up to me, and he was refreshing my memory because he knew I knew the statement because I've said it. Back in the old days, in the early 70s, Nixon said, we're all Keynesians now, which meant that even the Republicans accepted liberal economics. He says, I'm waiting for the day when we can say we're all Austrians now.
That's Texas Congressman Ron Paul. By we're all Austrians now, he means we're all followers of economists like Joseph Schumpeter and Friedrich von Hayek, and we support very different policies from those of the Keynesians. This is a coverage of the Iowa caucuses. Ron Paul celebrating a strong, what looks like a strong third place showing. He's polling in the low 20s, and Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney appear to be nip and tuck at the top somewhere in the mid-20s. Joining us from Manchester, New Hampshire is E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post, and in Washington, Matt Continetti, a contributing editor to the Weekly Standard. Matt, I want to ask you, we just heard from Ron Paul. Is this somebody who will help the Republican Party by being on the platform at a national convention, even if he's not on the ticket? Or is this the Republican equivalent of Al Sharpton, let's say?
I think he's the Republican equivalent of Gene McCarthy. I look at this and I see a children's crusade. I see the same thing that happened with Howard Dean in 2003, someone who motivated these young people. And then 2 years later, we had the entire Democratic Party adopt their positions. as someone who doesn't agree with Ron Paul on a lot of things, I'm a little bit disturbed by his fantastic showing by his own standards this evening, especially because it's based on the support, overwhelming support, by young people who are going to grow older. And, of course, Ron Paul...
They have a way of doing that.
They do. And Ron Paul has a son, Rand Paul, the senator, who is primed to take over his legacy. And Rand Paul, who I've reported on and covered and talked to, is much more mainstream than Ron Paul. So like McCarthy, like Dean, we may see this loss turn into a very strong influence in the Republican Party for decades to come.
E.J. Dionne, do you think that Democrats, and hearing the Continetti scenario of what might happen to Ron Paul, do you think they are worried or delighted at that prospect?
I think they're more delighted than worried, but let's give Ron Paul this. He's the first American presidential candidate ever to use the slogan, "We're all Austrians now." I want to see that on a bumper sticker in New Hampshire next week. I think that what you're seeing is the possibility of a third-party movement. Paul has been kind of cagey, and he's not very cagey most of the time. He's pretty direct, but he has never given a direct answer to the question whether he would, you know, ruling out a third-party candidacy. And what you're seeing here is the potential of a third-party candidacy. Now, some of those votes might come out of Obama, particularly the anti-war wing of the Paul constituency, and that's a substantial piece of it. But I would guess that more of the votes would come out of the Republicans. So
your colleague on the Washington Post op-ed page, George Will, has more or less described the Ron Paul third-party candidacy as the guarantee of the Obama election.
Yeah, well, I think that's more likely than the alternative. And when he gets showings like this, I think it sort of would feed his own sense that it would be something worth trying.
Matt Continetti, this is a candidate, Ron Paul, who is a true issue, but more than issue. He's a philosophical candidate. He has an ideology, one can say. Republicans, what should they do about it? Should they come to grips with this and say, well, let's find some room in our platform? The gold standard isn't enough. We have to dismantle the Federal Reserve as well while we're at it.
Well, I think the only way that you confront bad ideas is with good ideas. And I think Ron Paul's worship of the Constitution neglects our other founding documents, primarily the Declaration of Independence. Now, that's an abstruse debate internal to conservatives, but that's something that's going to have to be fought over as we deal with Ron Paul. And I'll see EJ's third-party bid and raise him a whole other one. I think we have the possibility of four candidates in the general election, not only if Ron Paul decides to deep-six his son's political career by going third-party or Libertarian Party, but remember, we got that USA Elect group, the Peter Ackman group, who's trying to get the balance. The centrist candidate, ballots all over the country. We could have a Michael Bloomberg or some other type of centrist running as well. So if we think that tonight is exciting, we may not have seen anything yet.
But the dynamic you're talking about with Rand Paul, the Kentucky senator, is that if Ron Paul were to bolt from the Republican Party and take his marbles and run as an independent or pursue the Libertarian line again, you're saying he would be sacrificing his son in that case.
I think so. I think because Rand's great strength, in my view, is that he's able to hold his father's positions but apply them in much more mainstream ways and also be able to compromise with people who his father would never deal with. And I think a lot of his goodwill that Republicans feel toward the son would dry up if the father hurt the Republicans' chances in the fall.
That's Matt
Agreed.
Yes, EJ, I was going to ask
you. I was just
going
to say, I think Rand Paul is the one person who might keep Ron Paul in the Republican Party. And I think on Don Gagne's point earlier, I think there may be enough evangelicals for Santorum, but he'd have to get some of these other candidates out of the race, or he would face the problem down the line that Mike Huckabee faced 4 years ago.
But when we say, for example, that Mitt Romney appeals to people with higher incomes, with people who take a more managerial view of the economy, we used to say country club Republicans many years ago. I guess all the country clubs are in such bad straits right now that nobody belongs to them anymore. But is the party really mostly about conservative Christians? That is, can they, if there were only one candidate, can they deliver a nomination, do you think, EJ?
They can deliver plurality victories in primaries. I think, in some places, notably South Carolina. I was talking to somebody down there today who thinks that Santorum could connect down in South Carolina. Here in New Hampshire, it's a different question. Given the closeness of Iowa, Romney really has to win a pretty big victory here. I think the odds are in his favor to do that, but it puts all the more importance on his coming out of here very strong.
Let me bring NPR's Ron Elving into this discussion. Ron, our senior Washington editor. What do you think about the problems? Well, the problems facing Mitt Romney right now.
The problem facing Mitt Romney is, on the one hand, that he is getting exactly the result in Iowa that he had wanted, and yet the field has now changed in such ways that what appeared to be a win-win situation for him might actually be a new set of complications he had not entirely contemplated. That is to say, we all thought Mitt Romney would be fine so long as there was not one anti-Romney candidate, as long as you could keep a lot of different people in the field. That was good for him. But it is possible that these two, Rick Santorum, Ron Paul, are the wrong two from the standpoint of Mitt Romney and his attempt to bring the party together in the long run. They might be pulling the party in some rather contradictory directions and making it difficult for him to build that bridge to bring them all back together as soon as possible, which he wants to do. So we're now looking at the possibility where New Hampshire could be a little closer than he would consider comfortable, where South Carolina could be a real challenge if Santorum can connect and if Ron Paul can find some of his people down there.
Is the distinction you're making that if there had been, say, a three-way race, Romney, Perry, Gingrich, and I'm sure there was some week back there when that seemed plausible,
given
what the polls have said, that there you would have had two anti-Romney candidates. But in this case, you have an anti-Romney candidate, Santorum, along with Romney, and then Ron Paul, who isn't anti-Romney. He's pro-Ron Paul.
What you have is a couple of people who are contesting with Mitt Romney to define the Republican Party of the present and the future. And that is a quite different proposition from just knocking off a Rick Perry or a Newt Gingrich. At one time, Rick Perry, by the way, looked like the guy who was going to test Mitt Romney's glass jaw, as Mara had said. As it turned out, of course, he delivered the blow to his own. But if Newt Gingrich had not been destroyed by this campaign that's been carried out against him, both by his rival candidates and also to a large degree by the conservative media, he might have been the kind of threat that Mitt Romney wanted to have and wanted to conquer.
Matthew?
And it's better to be lucky than good, and Romney has benefited from being lucky in his choice of opponents, and he's also secured that benefit by going harshly negative on challengers like Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich. It will be interesting for me to see how does he cope with Rick Santorum, who's going to be much harder, I think, to attack with negative ads. I'm sure Romney will find some way. And again, I think Santorum is a little bit more practiced and less prone in some ways to going over the top and self-destructing. So he might present a new challenge to Romney that Mitt hasn't seen yet.
I agree with that, EJ. I think that Romney may regret knocking out Newt Gingrich too early. He proved that he could do it. And now I cannot wait to see the debates this weekend, because if Newt Gingrich has one mission now, I think it will be to go after Mitt Romney, which could strengthen him if he comes out of it well. But it will be one heck of a fight on those debate stages.
And Gingrich would regard Mitt Romney as much more the person he's going against than trying to co-opt the people who voted for Rick Santorum today in the Iowa caucuses, you'd think.
I think so, because I think Gingrich is genuinely furious about millions of dollars in negative ads being dropped on him by an unaccountable super PAC. It's a legitimate beef he has against Mitt Romney, and I think he's not going to let go of that issue. And if he has some money left, my hunch is he's going to use it against Mitt Romney up here.
That's E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution. He's in New Hampshire already. Matthew Continetti, a contributing editor to The Weekly Standard, is here in Washington with me in the studio, as is NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. What we're talking about is a result in the Iowa caucuses. There are still, 20% of the precincts to be counted, but it looks like a very close contest with Romney and Santorum at the top, and then Ron Paul running a strong third place behind them. As I said, this is live coverage of the Iowa caucuses from NPR News. From NPR News, this is live coverage of the Iowa caucuses. I'm Robert Siegel. It's a very tight race at the top between Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney, both with around 24-25% of the vote counted so far. Ron Paul running in third with 21. And Newt Gingrich appears to have about 13% of the Iowa caucuses vote, and he right now is addressing his supporters at his headquarters.
I think are stunningly dangerous for the survival of the United States. And I think it's a very simple question, which I would be glad at the next debate to ask Congressman Paul. If you have a terrorist who is prepared to put on a bomb and wear it as a vest and walk into a grocery store or a mall or a bus and blow themselves up as long as they can kill you, why would you think that if they could get access to a nuclear weapon, they wouldn't use it? An Iranian nuclear weapon is one of the most frightening things we have to confront for the future of every young person up here and every young person out there. If they are going to live in safety, they have to live in a world in which there is no Iranian nuclear weapon, period. So, on that front, we'll have a very important debate. Is the world dangerous, and do we need to be strong enough to protect ourselves? Or is the world really safe, and it's just the Americans who are confused? I have no doubt about 9/11. It was bad people trying to kill us. It wasn't Americans. I have no doubt about the Iranians, and I have no doubt about the importance of the survival of Israel as a moral cause, which we have to recognize as central to our future. So, we'll have a great debate with Congressman Paul. And it's important for setting a new stable foreign policy for the 21st century. We'll have one other great debate. And that is whether this party wants a Reagan conservative who helped change Washington in the 1980s with Ronald Reagan and helped change Washington in the 1990s as Speaker of the House, somebody who is into changing Washington, or we want a Massachusetts moderate who, in fact, will be pretty good at managing the decay, but has given no evidence in his years at Massachusetts of any ability to change the culture or change the political structure or change the government. Now, let me be clear, because I think it's important, given all the things that were done in this state over the last few weeks. We are not going to go out and run nasty ads. We're not going to go out and run 30-second gotchas. We're not. But I do reserve the right to tell the truth. And if the truth seems negative, that may be more a comment on his record than it is on politics. So this is going to be a debate that begins tomorrow morning in New Hampshire, and will go on for a few months. And I'm convinced that the Republican Party will pick an heir of Reagan, a committed conservative, and somebody with a track record of changing Washington.
So former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, who ran a pretty distant fourth place in the Iowa caucuses today, addressing his supporters at his headquarters. And we heard him speaking first about Congressman Ron Paul and taking on the Texas congressman's views on foreign policy, which he described as very dangerous to the country, dangerous on the threat posed by Iran, dangerous, he said, he described him, well, indirectly as a truther. He knows what happened on 9/11, he said. Congressman Paul is been associated with some questions about what really happened on 9/11. Mr. Gingrich also mentioned the security of Israel. And so he's building a very strong case that Ron Paul's foreign and defense policy ideas are out of line with what Speaker Gingrich and what all the other candidates in the race have said. And Gingrich obviously intends to raise those in the next debate. He also said that he will be responding to Governor Mitt Romney, and it won't be his fault if it's negative, if his characterization of the Romney record comes out negative. He said he would not do it in 30-second television soundbite ads. However, Some would say he doesn't have the money at this point to buy the 30-second television soundbite ads, even if he wanted to do that. In any case, that was the Romney speech. We've heard from Ron Paul and, excuse me, that was the Gingrich speech. We have not yet heard at their headquarters from either Governor Romney or former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, who are the two leaders of the two front runners right now in the Iowa caucuses. I'm going to find out where I have to go next because I'm not quite sure. To Ari Shapiro. Well, he's at Mitt Romney headquarters, and that's at the Hotel Fort Des Moines. Ari's there, and do we know whether the Romney people think they've come in second or think they've come in first? What do they make of this?
They think it's more or less a tie. And at the end of the day, whether they come in first or second, these votes are so close, and there are so few votes separating Santorum from Romney at this point that it is not the decisive victory they were hoping for. Now, they're looking ahead to New Hampshire. They say they have the money, they have the infrastructure, they have the ground game. But just listening to Newt Gingrich talk and aim those barbs at Mitt Romney, you can tell this is really a fight within the Republican Party that is not ending with Iowa. It's going to go on. We even heard people here in the Mitt Romney ballroom boo when Gingrich talked about how others had run a negative campaign, how Mitt Romney's record might look negative when Gingrich described it. There were very loud boos. This is a fight that's going to go on long past Iowa.
The next round, of course, will be in New Hampshire, which is seen as native ground for Mitt Romney. At least it's his home territory right near Boston. Mm-hmm. Then South Carolina, which would be a place where it would not be especially favorable to Governor Romney.
That's right. And in fact, the Romney campaign had planned to spend the later part of this week partly in South Carolina. He's flying to New Hampshire tomorrow and then to South Carolina after that, coming back to New Hampshire for two debates over the weekend. But if he does seem really weakened coming out of Iowa, then that dominant controlling lead that he's had in the polls in New Hampshire for so long, you know, it might start to look unwise for him to leave New Hampshire and go to South Carolina, a state where, particularly if it seems like Rick Santorum has a lot of momentum behind him, Santorum might, do really well in South Carolina, and might Mitt Romney might be better advised to invest his energy in his own backyard of New Hampshire.
Okay, thank you, Ari. That's NPR's Ari Shapiro at Mitt Romney headquarters in Iowa. NPR's Ron Elving is in the studio with me, and as we've heard, questions facing Mitt Romney, what to do next. And we heard from Newt Gingrich, he came out swinging not just against Romney, but also against Ron Paul.
There does appear to be a gang forming. And that gang is going to be getting together in New Hampshire and South Carolina and beating up on Mitt Romney. And now that's not to say that Mitt Romney hasn't taken some blows in this campaign up to now. But with each candidate taking a somewhat different tack and throwing their blows from a somewhat different direction, I see a real attempt to gang tackle Mitt Romney.
That's NPR's Ron Elving, and this is live coverage of the Iowa caucuses from NPR News. From NPR News, this is live coverage of the 2012 Iowa caucuses. I'm Robert Siegel. It's a very close race between Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum. Ron Paul is running a close third.
This momentum is going to continue, and this movement is going to continue, and we are going to keep scoring, just as we have tonight.
More special coverage ahead from NPR News. This is special coverage of the Iowa caucuses from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Joining me in the studio, NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. And Ron, what we're seeing is we've seen the counting of the votes slow down. We're at about 80% or a bit over 80%, I gather, of precincts reporting. And with that, Romney and Santorum are they're nip and tuck around 24-25% of the vote. Ron Paul in third with 21%. Then there's a big fall off before you get to Newt Gingrich with, I guess, about 13% of the vote.
That is all correct. And if we look at a more breakdown version of those numbers, we see several counties along the Mississippi River that haven't fully reported, and those are good places for Romney. Hmm. We also see a number of scattered rural counties in the northern part of the state that have been good ground for Rick Santorum today. They have not fully reported. And then over on the western side of the state, near Omaha, we have several counties that have not fully reported, including some that have not even reached 50%. percent yet, and these have been good Santorum territory. Now, by one count, that represents on the Politico.com website that they have 93% of the precincts reporting in. That suggests that Rick Santorum has moved into the lead now by a little over 100 votes.
100 votes.
100 votes.
You mentioned the Politico.com website. Tomorrow morning, I should remind all of you listening, you can get analysis of the caucus results and the latest news in a special podcast, which you can find by visiting npr.org. Reporter Ben Philpott of member station KUT Austin, Texas, has come up to Iowa and is at the headquarters of Texas Governor Rick Perry, who has run in fourth place, we think, somewhere around 11% of the vote. Ben, what are you hearing at his headquarters?
Well, people are starting to get a little excited now. They're playing, for maybe the first time in the night, I would guess, they're playing some of the Rick Perry web ads, those longer two-and-a-half-minute ads that really get the audience pumped up. I don't know if you can hear them cheering and screaming in the background here. But Governor Perry is supposed to come out and speak at about 10:45 Central Time. So they're getting the crowd ready. This is the warm-up act, I guess.
We should expect that coming up, you think, within the half hour?
Yes, absolutely. Maybe about 13 minutes from now.
Okay. Rick Perry, of course, at one point was seen as the strongest challenger to Mitt Romney, entering the race with quite a campaign war chest, and just tripped on the way at the starting line and never regained his footing.
That's right. And, you know, this bus tour that he just finished over the last 3 weeks here in Iowa, this was all about trying to get a second look from Iowa voters.
And, Ben, I'm going to have to interrupt you right there because right
loud.
Now, sorry about that, we're going to go from Rick Perry headquarters to Bachman headquarters, where Michelle Bachman is speaking. She's finished with about 5%.
The republic that we are privileged to live in has worked. The process worked. It's the people of Iowa who chose tonight. It wasn't the pundits. It wasn't the media. And while this has been a very tough campaign, we should never forget that its crucible will make the eventual nominee tried for even the tougher battle that is yet to come against Barack Obama. I am so proud of the people who have run our campaign here in Iowa, and I will be forever grateful to this wonderful state and to the wonderful people of Iowa for launching us on our path to victory in the Iowa straw poll. And this state has given voice to people all over our country that Barack Obama's liberal policies are finished, and that in 2012, there will be another occupant in the White House. Who knows? Maybe even another Michelle in the White House. And that once again, it's the people's voice that will be heard there. And make no mistake, as I have said often and early on this campaign, Barack Obama will be a one-term president. Did you hear that, America? You heard it here from Iowa. I am a very real person. I am not a politician, nor do I ever hope or aspire to be a politician. I saw what the government was doing to all of us, to our children, and doing to our liberties. And so I decided to stand up. I decided that I was going to fight not only for our 5 children and our 23 foster children, but also for your children, too, because they deserve it. We deserve to give them a better and a more hopeful future. It's really true, and I'm sorry to say, we have strayed from the vision of our founders' view of government, and the 2012 election might very well be our last opportunity to reclaim.
On live coverage from NPR News of the Iowa caucuses, we're hearing Michelle Bachman, the Minnesota congressman, representative, addressing her supporters. She polled 5%. Of the major candidates, she's running in last place, and she's addressing her supporters right now.
Policies. And when the president wanted a $1 trillion stimulus package, I said no. And when the president pushed to take over your health care and replace it with socialized medicine, I led 40,000 people to Washington, D.C. to let the president know that the American people were against it. We don't want socialized medicine. We're not going to keep socialized medicine, and Barack Obama, socialized medicine will be repealed.
Yeah.
When the president said last summer he wanted to raise the debt limit to an unbelievable $16 trillion, I said no. Over the last 3 years, the American people have tragically been deprived in their president a leader as he routinely withers when he's confronted with the paramount challenges of our generation. President Obama is guarded and guided by his hardened ideology, and he's withheld any prospect for economic recovery as he routinely places his own political fortunes and his own reelection plans above the interests of the American people. Look no further than his denial of building the Keystone II pipeline. That was all about his reelection, nothing to do with energy independence for the American people. His liberal reign will end, and the American people and our economy will finally be free. Because you see, what we need is a candidate in the likeness and image of a Ronald Reagan, who has the bold differences necessary to take on a Barack Obama. What we need is a fearless conservative, one with no compromises on their record, on spending, on health care, on crony capitalism, on defending America, on standing with our ally Israel, on securing our border from illegal immigrants, or on defending innocent unborn life, or protecting marriage between one man and one woman, if anyone's confused, so we can defeat Barack Obama and his failed socialist policies. I believe that I am that true conservative who can and who will defeat Barack Obama in 2012.
It's Michelle Bachmann, who was the second candidate. We also heard Newt Gingrich a moment ago citing Ronald Reagan as the model for what the Republican Party needs this year. She polled about 5%, it seems, of the Iowa caucuses. Nearly all the precincts have reported now. And Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney are very, very close, up around 24-25% of the vote. Joining us by phone from Lititz, Pennsylvania, is Bob Walker, who's an advisor to Newt Gingrich, used to be a member of Congress from Pennsylvania, and worked with the then speaker in the leadership. Congressman Walker, Newt Gingrich finished with about 13% of the vote in Iowa. It's a fourth place finish. And he's talking about the need now to put tough questions to Ron Paul and to Mitt Romney. Why didn't he put tough questions to them before? Where was he?
Well, I think that the fact that, that we're still standing after the negative attacks that were launched at Newt proves that he has some durability in this campaign. And the reason why we didn't go after those candidates was because we still believe that running a purely negative campaign with distorted attacks on your opponents just simply is not the way that you ultimately create a candidacy that can beat Barack Obama. What we are going to do and what we are going to have as a tougher campaign in the future is to tell the truth about our record and about theirs. And
but is it fair to say, Mr. Walker, that Newt Gingrich let criticisms of him go unanswered? And part of it was he didn't want to be seen as that pugnacious Newt Gingrich from the early 1990s.
Well, I think what he was attempting to do was to make the case that that he has a very strong economic growth plan for the future, and that he does have the experience necessary to be a president that can totally change Washington and thereby bring about a rebuilding of America. And he was trying to make that point. I think along the way, the negative ads of his opponents, particularly coming from Ron Paul and from Mitt Romney, did have an impact and undermined his candidacy. And we have decided now that we're simply not going to let that happen in the future.
Do you have the money to answer with advertising, or are you simply going to be outspent by campaigns and super PACs that are aligned with Governor Romney and Congressman Paul?
Well, we think that the fundraising that we did at the final part of this year, we raised in the final quarter to somewhere between $9 and $10 million. That's a substantial sum of money that allows us to move on to into New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Florida. Yes, we're much better funded than we were in the past, and I think that will be a strong a portion of our ability to make our conservative message real.
Congressman, former Congressman Bob Walker, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Okay, today. Nice to talk to you.
And Mr. Walker, who is a Gingrich advisor, is also the executive chairman of Wexler & Walker Public Policy Associates. Joining me in the studio right now is Michael Dimmock, who is with the Pew Research Center and has been looking at the numbers as they've been coming in from the entrance polls and other analyses. What do you make of all this? What strikes you as most noteworthy in all the charts you've looked at?
Well, I think there were three things that kind of questions on our minds coming into this. One was, could Romney win over the conservative voters? He's fought for 4 years to improve his position across the span of the Republican Party. And by many measures, he may well have lost ground this year. He got 23% of the support of very conservative Iowans 4 years ago, just 14% this time. There was no sense that he was able to broaden or expand his scope. I think the other question was, who could really galvanize the Tea Party's energy? There's clearly an enormous amount of energy on the right, so, kind of represented by this Tea Party movement. And while Santorum certainly went a long way over the in a very short period of time in galvanizing that support, it's not clear that they've all come to one candidate. You see five of the seven candidates in double digits among strong Tea Party supporters, and Michelle Bachmann, who we just heard, getting pretty close to that at 9%. So there's still a lot of movement there in terms of where that energy goes.
So Mitt Romney can, on the one hand, say, look, a while ago I didn't see any point in campaigning in Iowa. I started late. My super PAC only spent on how many millions of dollars. And look how well I've done. I'm essentially tied for the lead. That's the glass half full, half empty it is. I haven't improved upon 2008 in all this time.
Right. And the energy in the party is in that conservative base. And that's not where he's been able to make a lot of headway. So there's, you know, about the majority of the people who voted for him because they thought he was the most likely candidate to defeat Obama. On the one hand, that's a show of confidence in him. And on the other hand, it's a show of, well, it's not because I really like him. It's just that he may be the strategic candidate.
Someone who shows real enthusiasm in those numbers that you've been poring over is Ron Paul, the Texas congressman.
Yeah, there's a lot of enthusiasm for him. How broad it can be, I think, is the big question. I mean, the other question we're looking for in polling generally is, where is there room for growth for the Republican Party? They lost an enormous amount of support from this public in the Bush years, and there's been very little real gain in support in the years since then.
Even last year's congressional elections, I mean, the turnout is sufficiently low that you can't count that as a huge gain?
Well, a lot of it was about turnout. And when you think about the public's image of the Republican Party, it has not improved at all. And arguably in the last 6 to 8 months, it's gotten even worse than it was in the end of the Bush years, which was a pretty tough time for the party. You're looking for where that growth can come from. And Ron Paul showed today that he could get a lot of new voters to the polls and win over a lot of younger voters. Whether that's an area for growth for the party, I think, is an open question.
Well, Michael, thanks a lot for being with us this evening. Michael Dimmock, Associate Director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson has been looking at these numbers and hearing what the candidates and their supporters have been saying all evening. Are you willing to give Mitt Romney some kind of a victory here tonight? Think that he's shown some success, or are you skeptical of what he's done?
Well, I think he finished just about where people thought he would. It actually happened to be exactly where he finished last time, except for he didn't have a Mike Huckabee who finished way above him. Mm-hmm. But he seems to be stuck. We've said all along he's the 25% man. He just can't seem to get above that. He stayed where he was. Ron Paul, you know, doubled his vote total in 4 years. Rick Santorum came kind of from the back of the pack to the front in just a couple of weeks. But Mitt Romney has run this, steady state campaign. Now, maybe that's enough. His strategy all along has been to be the last man standing. He doesn't care if Republicans fall in love with him, so long as they fall in line behind him as the nominee. Now, it's interesting, your poll, Michael, 63% think he's the most electable, even if they don't like him. Well, if beating Barack Obama is the strongest desire among Republican voters, they're going to eventually make their peace with Mitt Romney. But it does raise questions about enthusiasm in the general election.
I guess one number, Michael, that we won't really know for quite a while is how many people actually took part in the caucuses. What's the bottom line? Or Ron Elving's been looking at some of the numbers. Do we see a bottom line total for what's been reported in over 90% of the precincts?
It would appear, it would appear that we're going to have about 120,000 votes, which is almost exactly the number of votes that we had.
We had 119,000 4 years ago.
In 2008. And now it appears we will be just a bit over 120,000 of the votes that are counted thus far, and we're looking at about a 96% report from the precincts. It looks like perhaps a little over 120, but less than 125,000.
So we're not, as a crude measure of how much excitement there is about the caucuses generally, Michael Dimmick, we're not seeing an order of magnitude increase over 4 years ago.
Right.
And that
right.
wasn't the most enthusiastic time for Republicans 4 years ago.
No, it wasn't. I mean, 4 years ago is a tough comparison because a lot of folks were more interested in what was going on with the Democratic candidate campaign. And there are folks who come into this late in the game and sort of sign up at the end and pick their battle.
So, Mara, this is a group of people who, you're right, they want to defeat Barack Obama very badly, but there aren't that many more of them than there were when it was a question of whether it was going to be John McCain or Mike Huckabee or Mitt Romney 4 years ago.
That's right. And I think, you know, it's hard to put a lot of weight on this one statistic Iowa. In general, we've seen Republicans with an enthusiasm edge in the polls all along. No, that hasn't been demonstrated by the turnout in Iowa. But Romney has a lot of things going for him. If the result in Iowa was not decisive for him, what was decisive? One of the things that was decisive was the super PAC spending. He's got that on his side. He's going to have a tremendous amount of resources to deploy against Barack Obama. And then there's the question of has he kept himself, left himself enough room to move back to the center gracefully to appeal to independent voters. That's been his strategy all along. I think the extent to which he refrained from pandering to the Tea Party or moving even farther right was significant. He didn't. And I think he left himself some room.
That's NPR's Mara Liasson. I'm Robert Siegel. And this is special coverage of the Iowa caucuses from NPR News. From NPR News, this is live coverage of the Iowa caucuses. I'm Robert Siegel. One by one, the Republican presidential candidates are coming out to address their supporters, and still we don't know who the winner is in the Iowa caucuses. Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum each have 25% of the vote, with nearly all the precincts reporting. Ron Paul follows close behind with 21%. Joining us by phone right now from New Hampshire is Wayne McDonald. He's the chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party. He's in Derry. You're the next show on the circuit, and it looks like this could be a tougher, a little bit rougher fight in New Hampshire than it was in Iowa. Mr. Gingrich is saying he's going to respond to Mitt Romney. He's going to go after the foreign policy positions of Ron Paul. Are you a little bit concerned that this might not be as civil as you might want it?
Well, as a party leader, I'm always hopeful that it will be civil. It will always be gentlemanly, but and ladylike. But reality is that the candidates have a lot invested in their respective campaigns, and invariably there are attacks that occur. So we expect that, but we also know that the party's got a good history of coming together when it's over and uniting for victory. So we're confident of that outcome in the end.
Now, historically, what those of us in the rest of the country get out of Iowa and New Hampshire is your voters actually get to question these candidates up close, and they get to meet them and take the measure of them in person. Is that still happening, or has it been displaced by more advertising, more media campaigns in New Hampshire?
Now, we've been very fortunate here in New Hampshire. The compressed primary schedule and primary calendar was a little more competition for us than we would have liked this time. But we still saw the candidates quite a bit. They were at our Lincoln Day dinners, and they were at our backyard barbecues, our county picnics, and our living rooms for house parties. And so New Hampshire voters did have a chance to meet them quite a bit. And in the next week, I'm sure they'll have additional opportunities and before we make the decision on January 10th.
When is the next debate, by the way, in New Hampshire? When do you
The next debate is January 8th, this coming Saturday. This coming Saturday. I'm sorry, the 7th.
Do you,
There's going to be one on the morning of the 8th also.
And Mr. McDonald, just one other question. Should the Iowa caucuses winnow out the field a bit, that is, looking at the results that you've seen, should it be a message to either Congressman Bachman or Governor Perry, you didn't do it, you didn't cut it, time to quit?
Well, that's a decision that a candidate and their team has to make for themselves. Invariably, as each state has its contest, the candidate who doesn't do well or the candidates who don't do well in those contests have to assess whether it's prudent to continue. And that's something that Governor Perry and Representative Bachman will have to make. Certainly that might be an option they might want to consider.
Well, Mr. McDonald, thank you very much for talking with us.
Hey, thank you.
It's Wayne McDonald, who is chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party, speaking to us from Derry, New Hampshire. Let's listen now to what some of the candidates have said this evening. Congressman Ron Paul addressed his supporters in Ankeny, Iowa.
We have tremendous opportunity to continue this momentum. It won't be long that there's going to be an election up in New Hampshire. And believe me, this momentum is going to continue. And this movement is going to continue. And we are going to keep scoring, just as we have tonight.
That's Ron Paul. Congresswoman Michelle Bachman took aim at President Obama.
This state has given voice to people all over our country that Barack Obama's liberal policies are finished, and that in 2012, there will be another occupant in the White House. Who knows? Maybe even another Michelle in the White House.
Newt Gingrich said the Republican Party needs to debate its future.
And that is whether this party wants a Reagan conservative who helped change Washington in the 1980s with Ronald Reagan and helped change Washington in the 1990s as Speaker of the House, somebody who is into changing Washington, or we want a Massachusetts moderate who, in fact, will be pretty good at managing the decay but has given no evidence in his years at Massachusetts of any ability to change the culture or change the political structure or change the government.
Rick Perry also addressed his supporters, and that leaves two candidates we haven't heard from in Iowa tonight, Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum, who are still waiting to find out which of them is the winner. NPR's Ron Elving is with me in the studio. And, Ron, you know, we just heard Newt Gingrich saying that, Mitt Romney would be good at managing the decay. We're going to hear a pretty rough debate, I think, next week in New Hampshire, don't you think?
It should get rough and tumble in New Hampshire. I think that some of the terminology that's being chosen here is being chosen particularly to get under Mitt Romney's skin. And as we've seen in some of the debates, that is not impossible to do. Looking at the map in Iowa, there are about two dozen counties that have not fully reported. There don't seem to be any that have not reported, at least substantially. Most of those two dozen, and that's out of the 99 counties total. Most of those two dozen have reported substantially, 85, 90, 95% of the votes. We're really just picking up the last little scratchings. And Rick Santorum has a terribly small lead, but it is a little bit over 100 votes right now. And in a race like this, 100 votes can start to look pretty big. We're only going to have a few hundred more votes counted, maybe 1,000 or two. So this could still go either way, and I suspect that's why we haven't heard more from these two candidates. At least Rick Santorum would have reason to want to wait until he could say, I am number one.
A little over 100 votes in Iowa caucuses, which on the Republican side we expect to draw a little bit over 120,000. It was 119,000 4 years ago. That's an awfully close race. We have time for some brief last thoughts from those of you who are with me in the studio. Well, Michael Dimmock from Pew Research, last thoughts on what you've seen here.
Well, I mean, the big question for 2012 is going to be turnout and engagement. And as you pointed out earlier, in 2010, the Democrats didn't get to the polls in a way and lost big. What's going to happen with them and the independents moving forward? The layout of these candidates has a big effect on what will happen. Will it energize the left? Will it energize the center? Or will it leave them asleep?
Michael Dimmock of Pew, thank you very much for all of your work. And Matt Continetti, last observation.
I think Santorum's showing proves the resilience of social conservatism in Republican politics, certainly, and also cultural politics in Republican circles, especially with the base, which is a white working class base of the party.
Matt, thank you very much. And Mara Liasson, what do you want to say goodnight?
I think that Romney was shown to be a vulnerable front runner, as he has been all along, and I think his vulnerabilities will now be tested in a way that they haven't been yet.
Thanks to all of you. Ron, you want to give us a last wrap-up of where we stand in the vote here?
We have 96% reporting. We still have that less than one-tenth of 1% gap. Rick Santorum slightly in the lead. Just guessing from most of these counties, it would appear that he should pick up a few more votes than Romney, so he probably will be able to maintain that lead, but we cannot say for certain as it becomes midnight here in the East.
Ron Elving, Mara Liasson of NPR, Mike Demick of Pew, and Matt Continetti, a contributing editor to the Weekly Standard. Thanks to all of you for your contributions here. This has been special coverage of the Iowa caucuses. I'm Robert Siegel, and this is NPR News.